Welcome along to the last leg here on WLR. Jordan Norris back in the hot seat this evening and another busy week of sport on the horizon. Ray Scott will join us ahead of this week's Irish Open at Royal County Down. We'll have reaction from the opening round of the Waterford Senior Football Championship. Former Waterford FC captain John Frost will be along to preview a huge clash for the Blues this Friday. And Mark Phillips will be here to talk all things racing. Let's get started with golf. Now it is a huge week on the Irish golfing front with the Amgen Irish Open getting underway on Thursday at Royal County Down, and a man who'll be there throughout the course of the week for WLR Sports, thanks to Shore Engineering, is Ray Scott. Ray, a very, very busy week ahead, and of course plenty of local interest with Seamus Power and Gary Hurley involved, Mark Power too. Promises to be a really brilliant 4 days up in Royal County Down.
It's a huge week for Irish golf, Jordan. You know, the Irish Open is one of the oldest opens in the world, and you know, the pros love coming to Ireland to play it. And this year, of course, there's a huge incentive as well, because it's been played at Royal County Down, which was ranked number one in the world by Golf Digest. It's always in the top five, depending on which publication you listen to and stuff. So, you know, it's an iconic course and it will really test those players. And I think the weather forecast isn't probably going to be the best this coming week. So it really is going to test the players.
Absolutely. Testing conditions and the Irish Open often go hand in hand, Ray, from my memories of it. Just looking at the local contingent involved, Seamus Power obviously was involved in the FedEx Cup playoffs, had a bit of a break since. He finished quite well and made a bit of a battle to get into the latter stages of that. And he had a bit of momentum there. So hopefully he can kind of carry a bit of that coming over.
Yeah, that's one of the big issues, I suppose, with FedEx Cup, with the playoffs. Last year, of course, Seamus made it all the way to the Tour Championship. This year, he missed out. He got to as far as the BMW. And he, as you said, he made a sterling effort to try and make the you know, Eastlake for that final Tour Championship, that top 30. You know, he was so close to getting there, but even to get to the top 50 would have you know, got him a lot more entries, and particularly into next year's signature events on the PGA Tour, those $20 million events. But as you said, you know, he's coming back from injury this past season, so he's kind of had a hit and miss season altogether. But to end up where he was, you know, inside, I think he finished 56th at the end of the FedEx Cup, is a tremendous thing. And he loves coming to the Irish Open, as I've spoken to him before about it, coming to, you know, his home and spending some time at home in West Waterford, spending time playing golf around here, getting ready to play an iconic links course, you know. So it'll be big for Seamus, big too for Gary, because I think he's finished with a level par 70 today at the Omega Masters at Crans, Montana.
That's right.
So I think he's finished about 56th overall. But for importantly, he missed his last two cuts on the main tour, and you know, if you miss your cut, you get nothing. So if he's getting a few bob, it might pay some of the bills this week. But, you know, Gary as well has struggled in recent times. His starts have been limited as well. He's also in the field for next week. So a great opportunity for him as well. And what's brilliant too is that the support that will travel up from West Waterford, from, you know, Waterford itself, from the whole county, will, any golf fans will travel up. They'll want to follow Seamus and they'll want to follow Gary. And follow Mark Power as well, because Definitely. Mark Power is the son of the great Eddie Power, three-time Irish champion from Tramore. So there's kind of, you know, it's like everything, we claim him when he's doing well, we claim him as our own. But like Mark is, you know, he's turned pro, he's given it a good lash as well on the tour. And so he'll have significant support as well. So there's plenty locally for us to follow when we go up there. And that's always brilliant, isn't it, when you have a local interest? I know we look at Shane and we look at Rory and we look at Padraig Harrington. Tom McKibben is also playing there. But you know what? If you have a local interest, it's brilliant.
Absolutely. And just in terms of the international players and maybe some of the big names within the world rankings that are set to come to Royal County Down for the week, Ray, could you maybe advise us of that?
Yeah, there's some great ones actually when you look at it. You know, a lot of the big people that are coming here, Bob McIntyre, of course, who's had such a breakout season, on the PGA Tour.
Yeah,
like that is huge, you know, for him. Luke Donald, the European Ryder Cup captain, is playing. You know, when you look at the categories, they call them the category zeros. McIlroy's in there, Guido Migliozzi of Italy, Eric Van Rooyen of South Africa. You know, there's a lot of good players coming, and I suppose Ryan Fox, you know, from Australia. Like, they're good players that'll come here.
Of course,
you have to admit though that, you know, some of that the fields have been weakened on the DP World Tour in recent years with the changeover, LIV Golf, the PGA Tour, the reaction to that, you know. However, you always are guaranteed great golf. That's one of the big things, you know. But I'm just looking down some of the lists there. Pablo Larrazabal, you know, you've got, as I said to you, we had, you know, one player actually who came up, he was an amateur around the same time as Rory McIlroy, is Matteo Manassero.
Yeah, that's right.
And he went very close to winning the Open Championship at Turnberry in 2009. And he was being considered to be one of the better golfers, one that would challenge. But he went through a yips period, but he's now coming back as well. You have, you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick and his brother Alex as well is playing, you know. And as I said, Luke Donald also involved there. And then we have two amateurs as well from Ireland, Max Kennedy, who lost out in a playoff to get into the Open Championship this year, and Sean Keeling, who played in the Junior Ryder Cup in Rome last September. So, you know, there's such a lot of good golfers playing in this tournament.
There really is. Haven't had a home winner since Rory McIlroy 2016 at the K Club, Ray. I remember those scenes were particularly brilliant. Mm. And last played in Royal County Down back in 2015 when Søren Kjeldsen won it. To have a home winner, like as you mentioned there, we have potentially 11 Irish golfers. Like, there's a strong chance we're definitely going to have plenty of home contenders as well. And the crowd at Royal County Down, they'll row in behind that as the Saturday and Sunday come into play.
I was following up some information there earlier in the week, and I think there was 1,000 tickets left across the whole week for the tournament. And, you know, the Irish crowds are synonymous with golf. Their knowledge is second to none. We would love an Irish winner, but the pressure on the Irish players is so much. And, you know, Padraig Harrington talked about it, how long it took him to win an Irish Open. Rory, Shane, you know, and we had a situation as well, if you remember, when the Irish Open was part of the Rolex series. So there was a lot of huge entries, and then it started to wane. Mm. But you had you know, the injection of cash into it from the European Tour, and then they were being hosted by the likes of Rory McIlroy, Paul McGinley hosted, Shane Lowry hosted. Now Amgen have come on board. Of course, it was the Horizon Irish Open in 2022, and of course they were acquired by Amgen in 2023, and I think Amgen have committed to sponsoring the Irish Open until 2027. So it's one of the best tournaments on the TP World Tour now in terms of a purse as well. So that attracts the better players, of course.
Absolutely. It's a massive incentive that'll hopefully draw in that higher calibre of field. When I think of the memories of the Irish Open, Ray, my mind always draws back to 2009, that playoff, Shane Lowry and Robert Rock in County Louth. That's one that always stands out to me. I know you've been covering Irish Opens for plenty of years. Is there anyone that particularly stands out in your mind?
That one certainly stands out as well, Jordan, because I got absolutely saturated. The weather, if you remember, was appalling. You know, but there's been some great ones. I think Padraig winning down in Adair Manor, that was a huge win because he was always struggling to win it and trying to win it. Rory winning at the K Club, and I think we all remember that 3-wood approach on the last, which was just phenomenal, you know. And then we're talking about it being played on a links course. You know, the pure golf is links golf. That's where it was invented. That's where the game starts. There's only 240 courses around the world, and 60 of them are in Ireland. So, you know, you've got 25% of links golf courses in the world are in Ireland. There's only 5, would you believe, in America. So,
wow.
So the players, and 4 of them are in the same place, Bandon Dunes. So, you know, so they don't have that. So they want to come to play in links on links courses. That's why the Open Championship is so iconic. The Scottish Open as well, played usually on a links course that's been played at the Renaissance Club in recent years. They want to play. That's where the golfers will be tested. So, you know, you want to play on the best course. You want them to come here. You want to have great golf, and you're going to get it. And I remember actually when it was the Murphy's Irish Open, it was played in the Millennium 2000. It was played in Ballybunion.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it. I think it was a Per Ulrich Johansson or one of the Swedes won it. His name just escapes me at the moment. But it was like a pet day. It was pet week. It was, I think, 20 degrees. I think it was 19 under on around Ballybunion. You know, you just couldn't. There wasn't a puff of wind, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to get wind this week at the Irish Open. And they did talk up as well about trying to have a kind of a lynx swing in the running to the Open Championship. And one of the big things that was in its way was the French Open was usually the week before the Scottish Open, which is the week before the Open Championship.
Yeah.
And the French weren't returning. They weren't giving up that prime slot on the calendar. Now the French Open's on the week after next, you know. So it has changed. It would be brilliant. It would attract that, you know, as you see in the run-up to the Open Championship as well, all the American golfers playing in Ireland, you know, as they get ready for, try and get that. So I think as long as when it's on a links course, you're going to get the players wanting to play in it. Do we have the skill level? You know, Shane has, as I said, won it at County Louth on a links course. Does Rory? Rory says he struggles in the wind a little bit now. Seamus may not have as much, even though they played a lot of amateur golf when they played Seamus and Rory. You know, they would have played a lot of links golf as well. Padraig has played links golf. So we keep our fingers crossed for an Irish winner, but I think... I think it's a big ask. And Roy County down, so many blind shots as well. You know, it really is a test of golf.
Absolutely. I think, as you mentioned earlier, that pressure factor coming in on top of the conditions, it makes it all the more difficult for the Irish contingent. But just as a final question, Ray, I suppose, with a punter's cap on in a way, is there any maybe outside contender that you'd be keeping a particular eye on in the week?
Oh, my God. interesting. Yeah. It's very hard. I think Bob McIntyre is a good bet. You know, Robert McIntyre. He's had a great season. He plays a lot of has come up through with links golf in Scotland. I think he's not a bad choice. You know, we're still waiting to get the field finalized, but there's always somebody who comes out of the pack that we haven't heard of him all season, you know. But I think Shane can do well as well if the pressure's off him. I think Shane would be worth it each way. You'd love to think that Seamus could do something for it, you know. And I think, you know, the heart would love Shane or Rory or Seamus. The head saying, I think the pressure is quite a lot on them, you know.
But
I think Bob McIntyre might be an outside bet here.
Absolutely. Well, look, we remains to be seen. Hopefully, just coming into the Saturday and the Sunday, we have a couple of Irish players in contention, and fingers crossed.
It's them making the cut too. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah.
You're right, Jordan. It's the Irish guys making the cut. And you know what? It doesn't matter. You know, the public will want to see Rory, Shane, and Padraig make the cut. You know, we all want Seamus and Mark Power and Gary Hurley to make the cut as well, because that obviously makes our life very, very interesting as well for over the weekend. But you know, it doesn't matter anyway. The event is almost sold out, so they'll all turn up in strength, you know, in numbers as well. So it'll be a great week. It is always a fantastic week on the Irish golfing calendar, and it's because the crowd make it as well. It's the people who travel up. They're knowledgeable. They appreciate good golf. They understand the game. You know, you turn on the TV and you watch golf week in, week out, particularly on the DP World Tour, and there mightn't be 50 people at it.
Yeah, it can be quite flat.
Every single match will be followed. You know, it doesn't matter who it is, you know.
Definitely. Well, I think it bodes quite well, and obviously the plans that are there for the future as well. Hopefully it's only going to get better. And of course, you'll be giving us the hourly updates across the course of the 4 days as well, Ray, thanks to Shore Engineering as well. So we really look forward to everything that the week has to offer, and hopefully we have plenty of national and local success to celebrate. Ray Scott going to Royal County Down this week. Thanks a million for your time.
Thanks, Jordan.
You're listening to The Last Leg here on WLR. WLR's weekly Monday night sports programme with me, Jordan Norris. Now we're going to touch on Gaelic games, and it was a big weekend, the launch weekend for the Waterford Senior Football Championship, and four results to report. Galtier 114 on Ryan 18, Ballinacorty 212, Kilrossenty 17, Clashmore, Kinsale Beg 18, Roan Moore 4 points, and the reigning champions Rathgormack 415, the Bricky Rangers 4 points. Tomás McCarthy attended that game between Galtier and on Ryan on Saturday night, and afterwards he spoke to attacker JJ Hutchinson, who chipped in with 7 points in his 22nd season for Galtier.
I'm here with Galtier forward JJ Hutchinson after a first round win over on Ryan. JJ, how did you withstand that on Ryan comeback in the second half?
I think we just stuck to our plan, what we had been doing in the first half. Looked every good team, they were in the county semi last year, like, you know, so every good team is going to have their purple patch. It's just about weathering a bit of a storm, and I think we had kind of 5 or 6 points on them, so I think when they got the goal, we still had 2, we were still 2 up, so we just kind of settled down and went about our business again, you know.
Is Mark Fitzgerald one of the top club footballers in the county, JJ?
Oh, sure, he's unbelievable, like, you know, Mark's athleticism, his attitudes, everything about him, like, you know, you see it from the inter-county hurling scene. I think he's been one of Waterford's top performers and you just don't get that, like, that's built in Mark, comes from a great family, you know, his father was stalwart at the club, still is, you know, so look, everything about Mark is top notch, you know.
You've been lining out for Galtier since 2003, JJ, at adult level. What brings you back again in 2024?
Sure, it's just the love of football, Tomás. You know, once you can still keep going. You know, you see a lot of lads, they get to a certain age and they think that they have to give it up. But no, if your sport life balance is good, you can get away with it. And thankfully, mine is, with wife and family at home. Like, you know, they allow me to go train the 4 or 5 nights a week. You know, that's required. So. It's easy to do it when it's easy to do it. If you know what I mean, it's look, I just love football, so it's easy for me to come back, and I'm going to keep coming back and coming back until I can't walk anymore. You know, I might be sitting on the bench, like, but I'd be still. And look, it's about bringing through the next generation as well. Like, you know, it's easy to walk away, but we have young lads coming off minor and under 20 successful winning teams, and it's about bringing them through as well. Like, you know, about just instilling a belief in them that we can get over the line and that football's a really good game to play, you know, and keep kicking on.
Do you think there's a senior football title in this Galtier team?
Yeah, I think there is, Tomás. You know, the football championship is great because it's very open, like, you know, there's definitely, like, if you were to go through the 9 teams this year that are going out, like, even Roan Moore coming up, like, there's a serious football and outfit, like, you know, they beat Strably in a playoff last year, so they're no, you know, I think it's a really enjoyable championship because you're going out and everybody's kind of at the look. Rathgormack and Denier are still, they're still up there, like, you know, they're still the ones to catch, but, you know, I think we're getting closer, and the other teams believe they're getting closer, and that's what makes it a great championship, you know, because, you know, I think anybody can win it once they put their mind to it, like, you know.
What do you make of the fact that players that lined out in county hurling finals last weekend are now back in action in the first round of senior football this weekend?
I think they should be given the break, but I don't know, was there a kind of a record amount this year? You had Clashmore, Brickies, Ballygunner, Passage were up to the week before, you know, Ballinacorty, Abbeyside. So everybody can't have the week off either, but I do think if there was 2 teams, all right, you know, if there was 1 or 2 teams, they could get the bye the first week, I think. But look, this year is probably, I think there's 4 or 5 that were kind of knocking around the latter stages of hurling, so it's hard to give everybody the week off. But thankfully we had our Passage lads back nearly going on 2 weeks, and we had our Ballygunner lads back on Wednesday night. You know, fortunately enough, we were able to keep Desi kind of fresh. He's carrying still a bit of a knock, so, you know, try to get him into the fray as soon as possible if we can, you know.
What are your thoughts on the way the club championship is structured, JJ? Because I know you said last year you would like more of a mix between the hurling and the football.
Yeah, look, it's easy to say it, Tomás, you know. I would like, you know, even though we've had a cracking evening for football tonight, like, weather-wise, you know, so we're not overly bad, but I think there should be, I don't know, maybe change it year on year, maybe put the football first, then the hurling second, you know, or, you know, because I think from the word in Wexford, it's just not working. You know that hurling managements are not leaving their players go play the football. I think there was something only like, I'm not sure now, but I think I heard that there was only 6 or 7 hurlers played football in Wexford in the first 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, I'm not sure if that way works either. Like, so look, it's between a rock and a hard place. Like, I don't know, maybe we change it up every year. Football first, 1 year football, because like the footballers were into the championship longer than the hurlers this year. So, you know, they say, oh, the lads are coming off hurling, whatever. But, you know, it could be a little bit more balanced, I think. But sure, look, we'll keep going anyway.
JJ Hutchinson there, an absolute stalwart of the Gaelic football scene here in County Waterford. And we have plenty of games coming up again this weekend. On Saturday, we have a doubleheader at Fraher Field beginning at 5 o'clock. It's the Nyer versus Roan Moore. And then at 6:30, it is Clashmore Kinsale Beg versus On Rhine. And again on Sunday, another doubleheader at Fraher Field, beginning with the meeting of Abbeyside, Ballinacorty and the Bricky Rangers at 1:45. And that is followed by the clash of Rathgormack and Kilrossenty at 3:15. We'll have updates throughout the course of the weekend here on WLR. Stay with us after the break. We're going to be talking all things Waterford FC. Welcome back to the last leg here on WLR. Jordan Norris here with your weekly Monday night sports programme. And now we're turning our attentions to soccer. And a massive week for Waterford FC. They take on Dundalk at the RSC on Friday night in the League of Ireland Premier Division. The Blues currently sitting in 5th in the table in the race for Europe as we're coming into the penultimate stage of the season. And joining me now to talk about the big game is former Blues captain John Frost. John, I don't think the stakes could be any higher for Waterford going into the game on Friday night. Would you think it's a must-win game if they want to get into Europe?
At this stage, I would say it is a must-win game, Jordan. Just with the few results we've had of recent, Derry, and then last week with Sligo, etc. You know, and we're still thereabouts with the results we've had, which is amazing. But if we could get 3 points here now against Dundalk, it would really put us back into the race for Europe. And it's great that we're able to talk about a race for Europe. You know, at the start of the season, we would have been just happy staying up. But now that we are thereabouts, it'd be great for the team to show some sort of fight for that place. And Dundalk will be an interesting one.
It definitely will. And I was just about to mention, John, Dundalk themselves, they have plenty on their plate. They were written off at one point, you know, as consigned to life in the first division next year. But there's been a bit of a revival in recent weeks for them. And, you know, they're coming to the RSC in a need for vital points as well. So there's so much to play for both sides.
Yeah, it's been very interesting at the bottom of the table. You know, it's been topsy-turvy. You've had Clancy come in as manager and they were at the foot of the table, and he got them out of that position for maybe a game or two, and then the transfer window opened, and Drogheda recruited really well with James Taylor and the likes, and now they've taken the front foot on getting out of relegation, and so it's been very interesting. And then of recent, you have Dundalk having a few financial problems, so the two clubs just trying to get ahead of each other. But as much as Dundalk are having off-field problems, Clancy is very experienced, and he'll have a tight-knit group, and he'll create an atmosphere of them and us, and let's show everybody. And he's going to come to Waterford, and he's going to look at Waterford's last few results, and he's going to think he has a chance of getting his team a result to climb out of that relegation position. But then, you know, Waterford, will, on their side of things, will be looking at it going that, with all the off-field problems, how much resolve do Dundalk have? Are they there for the taking? And as we said, there'll be a lot to it on Friday night.
There certainly will. History doesn't really count for anything, but I suppose it is more so in our favour that Waterford have had the upper hand on Dundalk in the game so far this season, and they've put away a few goals. Pretty good away performance in Oriel Park the last time, John, as well. So, in fairness, some of the Blues' best performances in this campaign have actually come against the opposition on Friday night.
Yeah, true that. Played Dundalk, up in Dundalk, when they were having a good vein of form. And we finished them off very easily. Very professional performance. Some brilliant passes to play and fantastic goals. And it was easy for Waterford on the night when Dundalk have made it very hard for teams in Oriel Park. So you know, hopefully we can just get back on the horse now. And you know, we played against Derry and we should have got a point there, just an old mishap. And it was difficult for us up in Sligo. Sligo, I know they got a thump in the week before playing Waterford, but they were out to show people what they're about, and they did against Waterford. So always a difficult place to go to. But Waterford have a performance in them. They've shown us this season that they have performances, and no better time than to pull out one of those games that we know that Waterford possess. And as you said at the start of this, Jordan, 3 points, if they could get it, put us right back in the mix. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Galway and Sligo and the likes react to Waterford getting hopefully at 3 points.
Definitely. Just looking at the fixture calendar, I know you don't ever really look past what's coming this week, John, but it's coming up to, we have Dundalk and then a trip to St. Pat's and then at home to Galway. Those three games are almost, in a way, they could be season defining at this rate, the next three games.
They could be. Do you know, we have Dundalk, we've done well against Dundalk, and we'd be, I'm sure, Waterford looking at that as being one of the games where they can get something. Pats are tricky. It's away to Pats. We've done well against Pats this season, beating them at home there. Do you know, but Pats now are hitting a good vein of form, did well in Europe, and getting a few results in the league. So it's, they're starting to turn the tide. It'll be a difficult trip to Pats. But, you know, we don't do so well against Galway. But it could be just the one time where we could go and beat them, and it could mean the world to us. And what a time it would be then to beat Galway. And, so you know, you'd be looking at the next three games, and you'd be hoping that Waterford can get two wins at least. And that would really put a push on for Europe. Do you know, as I said, Waterford are ahead of schedule, really. Do you know what we said at the start of the season? We'd be happy if they stayed up. But now that they're there and they've had a little hiccup with the vein of form that they're in at the moment, but in the next three games, if they could manage, it's easier said than done now, Jordan, but if they could manage to get two wins, it would really ask questions of the teams around them as regards that European spot.
Absolutely. Just to finish, John, I've never really liked the term bonus territory, but like you mentioned it there yourself, the prerogative this season was, okay, we're back up in the Premier Division, let's just consolidate that place, and anything else on that, realistically, it is a bonus. Like, we're talking about potential European football here coming into mid-September. Like, I think that's a fantastic achievement within itself. If we just end up in a situation where on the last night when the Blues are going up to Tallaght to take on Shamrock Rovers and they have something like that to play for, then I think no matter what, like, you just have to hold your hands up and say that was a fantastic first campaign back at Premier level.
For sure, definitely. Do you know, if that was the case, the big thing then is to build on it. Do you know, not just to sit on your laurels and pat each other on the back. The thing is now to build on it. You know, making sure the manager stays. I know there's no question of that floating around anywhere, but you're starting with that, and then you're making sure that your big players are signed up for next season, that the team doesn't disband. That's been kind of the trait over the years, where you could have a good Waterford team and then it just disbands and you build from scratch again, and you're hoping that the recruitment is good enough to, and the new team from scratch is good enough to keep the team in the league. If Waterford could change the vein of thought and keep a lot of the players, which they did from last season, you know, and build on Bagley, on McDonald, and there's numerous names I'm leaving out there. But if they could build on all of that, you could make a right push for next season, and it'd be brilliant for the supporters and everybody. But as you said, Jordan, once again, if we did get into that type of scenario where we're pushing for the European spot come last game of the season, it'd be just phenomenal. It'd be great for the county. Great for the supporters, give us that buzz that we had last season again, and it'll be a fantastic way to finish.
It definitely will. Well, we'll knock it off one step at a time. Waterford FC versus Dundalk on Friday night, 7:45 at the RSC. Really encourage everyone to get out and support the Blues. I'll be doing updates live on air next week. John and Ray Scott on the road then up to Inchicore as Waterford take on St. Patrick's Athletic. John Frost, thanks a million for your time as always. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Plenty to cover on the racing front, because plenty has happened in the past few weeks. I'm delighted to say joining me to talk about it all is WLR's racing correspondent, Mark Phillips. Mark, I suppose we'll start with a couple of positives. I think in the last month or so, it's been an incredibly positive time for Henry de Bromhead, and actually particularly on a flat basis. He's brought a lot more flat horses into his yard in the past few years. Obviously, the big win coming with Magical Zoe in the Ebor. And I suppose it's just good to show the versatility of the man himself from a training perspective. It knows no bounds.
No, true. And I suppose he learned a lot. He worked with Sir Mark Prescott for a while, and I'd say he learned an awful lot there, because he's one of the shrewdest trainers in the UK. But he's always, he will always tell you, National Hunt is his priority.
Of course.
But
yeah,
he is dabbling more in the flat in recent years, and it's obviously paying dividends. And you know what? But by having those winners, he's going to attract bigger owners. Like Cheveley Park, they had their jumpers with Henry.
That's right.
They are huge on the flat in England. Don't be surprised if they give Henry one or two horses to train on the flat going forward.
Absolutely. I think it can only be a positive development at a lot of perspectives as well. And you mentioned to me on Saturday as well that if Magical Zoe is to run in the Melbourne Cup, obviously we don't know yet whether she will or not,
yeah,
but she'll be the first ever Waterford horse to do so.
I would think so, because you don't get many of them going over for that, you know.
No. And when is that? That's not October.
November.
No. November.
Yeah, I think it's the first week in November. It's the race that stops the nation.
Absolutely.
Everybody takes an unofficial half day or day off to watch the Melbourne Cup.
It's the biggest race in the whole of Australia, and there's a massive horse racing scene in Australia as well, and the prize money on offer for the Melbourne Cup as well is astronomical.
Yeah. But now there's, we were saying about the logistics of getting somebody or getting a mare there, like, I don't know how would she take that long travel. You just don't know. But I'm sure if they do go, they'll have a ball of a time over there, because it's absolutely huge, you know.
Absolutely. But like, it just goes to show the versatility of the horse itself. Like, fourth in the county hurdle at Cheltenham, then going on to win the Ebor Handicap. Like, that's, you know,
yeah,
the versatility,
serious,
trip-wise even, in terms of the versatility. Like, it's very, very eye-catching.
It is. And she seems to go on all types of ground, which is great as well. You know, she's versatile that way as well. Not a lot of them do that. They either want it softer or good, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it remains to be seen what happens there. I suppose, drawing back to somewhat of a negative and the perspective of what's been topical in the sport in the past few weeks, we've seen the 10-month ban come out for Shark Hanlon in the last week. Obviously, this relates to the travel of a dead horse and the tarpaulin being lifted. You see the pictures on social media of the dead horse on the back of the cart with no cover. Look, it's a bad look all around, of course it is. And I suppose Shark is the most high profile trainer to receive a significant ban. And from an animal welfare perspective, obviously there's a lot of things going on at the moment in the background in the sport that people have been critical of. It's not a good look for the sport as a whole.
I agree. And that's probably why they gave him such a stiff sentence as such. But he's going to appeal it. I think he will be successful in partially reducing maybe down the suspension as such. Look, it doesn't look good. But like, he didn't inflict any damage on an animal. He didn't.
There was probably no ill intent.
No. It just, you know, you just have to be careful now these days with social media. People are picking up everything on it. Like the day, remember Davy Russell was down at the start in Tremor, and the horse was acting the maggot, and he was shown him the practice hurdle before they race, and the horse was kind of wouldn't look at it, and he was jumping on the hurdle, and he kind of hit him a slap between the ears. That was picked up, like, and it was, you know, Davy got into trouble over that. You just have to be very careful where animals are concerned.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like, I mean, on race courses, there's cameras everywhere, of course. Like, and I mean, obviously, if anyone falls foul of anything, of course, they should be punished 100%. But as you mentioned, you kind of have to always be on your toes now with the influence of social media. And I think particularly that's probably on the back of the whole where we're seeing all these private investigations going on. I know we had the Panorama in Britain. We had the RTE Primetime Investigates in Ireland.
Yeah.
Like, people are circling the wagons, I suppose, trying to find loopholes within the industry that they can flag and kind of try and bring it down. There's a lot of people that want to, I suppose, see horse racing in a certain light.
Yeah. And you must remember, but like, I suppose those incidents are few and far between.
They're isolated.
Like, because you have so many trainers in Ireland, so many horses in Ireland and England, like, and maybe just for a couple of incidents that happened during the year, you know. But you always have to be on your guard. That's all I'll say.
Absolutely. I mean, like, from a welfare perspective, like, you know, thoroughbred horse races are some of the best treated animals in the entire world. Like, that kind of goes without saying. And the argument that I would always have with people, Mark, is that for people that say, you know, horse racing is a cruel sport and so on, a lot of these horses wouldn't even be born were it not for horse racing, you know, the way that they're bred, the way that they're treated. Like, they are born, in a sense, for the sport. So, like, there is always that counter-argument. But I suppose certain narratives, I suppose, will always suit certain people.
They're born to race, really. That's the thorough bit. That's their... You know what I mean? That's what they're there for, to race. And like, a lot of them, or most of them, love racing. You'll get the odd couple, won't you'll see them come, they'll stand still in the stalls, they won't race. So, like, you know, the horse knows as well whether he wants to race or not, you know?
Yeah. Just going back to a development that we've had in recent weeks, and I suppose it is a story that will gather momentum in the weeks ahead because we don't know what way it's going to go. But Henry de Bromhead, Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott and Gavin Cromwell, all of them had at least 50 winners in Ireland last year, four leading trainers. But there's, I suppose, more races coming down the track now that are actually going to exclude these trainers because they want to have a calendar which I suppose is more open to the smaller yards. And I could see the thinking behind it and why you'd want to do that, to entice more people in from the smaller yard perspective. But then you lock out the four big trainers. Now, it looks as if the four trainers are going to come together and take combined legal action against this on the grounds of exclusion. I think this could be a very, very ugly process.
Yeah, it's got a lot of airtime
in
the last couple of weeks, both in Ireland and in England as such, because the Racing Post would pick it up very easy. There's for and against it, Jordan. I can see, I think it's well-intentioned by Horse Racing Ireland.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
But I just don't know. Like, Henry has a lot of moderate horses too. Let's be honest about it. He'll tell you that himself.
I think all four of them probably do in some sense.
Yeah,
Mark,
they do. You know, so you're going to penalise the owners of those horses by excluding them from races that they should be in.
That,
and you know,
probably have an actual chance of winning.
Yes.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, like, just for argument's sake, like, I know they say a lot of these races will be, I suppose, a handicap within certain perimeters and then a couple of bumpers within. But, like, you know, if a horse wins a maiden hurdle and then goes off and wins like a low class handicap, and then you're penalising it, say it can't run, and then you're putting it into a race where it has absolutely no hint or hope, like, that's not good for anybody.
No, and the owners are paying the bills every week, like, for the horse, you know, so they, like, as I say, it was well intentioned, but maybe they just need to look at it again and see. And it would be terrible if legal action was taken, because it's just washing your dirty linen in public once again, you know.
So, Mark Phillips, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan.
That's all we have time for this week. Another busy week of sport ahead here on WLR. And WLR, the number one place to be for it. We have the Saturday Sports Pod, our new Saturday Sports Show, coming up this Saturday from 3 to 6 with Tony Kelly. Lorna Parker with Tomás McCarthy Friday evening from 6 o'clock. And of course, Monday evening, 6 o'clock, the last leg with me, Jordan Norris. So much coming up this week. I'd like to thank John Frost, Ray Scott, Tomás McCarthy and Mark Phillips for all their help this evening. Have a great week. John O'Shea is coming up next. Some great tunes, some great music. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you next Monday.